Welcome, everybody, to the latest episode of the Sight Screen Cricket Journal podcast. My name's Tohid Qureshi. Today, we're going to take a look back at the recently concluded ODI series between Bangladesh and the West Indies, as well as taking a look forward to the Test series that will be taking place in a few days' time. I've got two fantastic guests joining me today. On the call, we have Mr. Johnny Barron, international cricket commentator, broadcaster and just general cricket expert. Welcome, Johnny.
Hello, hello. Lovely to join you guys.
And also we have, all the way from Dhaka in Bangladesh, someone who I describe really as the voice of Bangladesh cricket. He's a commentator that we're all privileged to listen to basically whenever Bangladesh play. He is, of course, Mr. Shamim Chowdhury. Welcome, Shamim Bhai.
Thank you very much. Very good afternoon to you. Very good morning, I suppose, in London now. And it's a pleasure joining you guys.
Thank you. Thank you very much, both of you, for joining today. So let's get straight into it. The first thing I wanted to do was just to really assess the series overall. So, Johnny, let me start with you. I guess my assessment would be that it was a very professional job by Bangladesh to kind of comprehensively beat a depleted West Indies team. Just interested to hear your take on things.
Yeah, I think, you know, West Indies went into this series with, I think, technically 10 frontline players unavailable for various reasons, which we'll probably go in through on the duration of this call. But fundamentally, you could probably say there were 25 cricketers that the West Indies didn't have the choice of. You only have to look at various leagues around the world, the T10 and various other, the Big Bash, as an example, to see where their cricketers are actually plying their trade. Or, in fact, they're probably resting up with the IPL window coming up fairly shortly. And the difference in class and experience was quite extraordinary. I think it's only the third time in the history of the game that there's been such a difference in terms of caps. I think Bangladesh amounted in that first ODI 1,115, and the West Indies had 115 caps. That's over 1,000 caps between the two sides. Rodman Powell was the only one with any experience with 34 caps going into the game. And going to Bangladesh, it's a hard place to win, really hard. Since 2015, they've been exceptional in bilateral series at home. And West Indies had it all to do. And it's worth bearing in mind as well, there are so many points available in these kind of what I would call frontier games, going into that World Cup, 10 points a game, every match is critical. And it was a terrible start to their World Cup 2023 start for the West Indies.
It certainly wasn't a great start, obviously not picking up any points. Do you think, I guess as you were saying, it was a vastly inexperienced team compared to Bangladesh. Were you in any way a bit surprised as to kind of how bad they actually did perform?
Look, I mean, if you're not going to score 200 on the three occasions that have been required of you, if nobody is going to score, well, one person, Rodman Powell, is the only person to score over 100 runs in the series, and there wasn't one half century. I mean, the paucity of those statistics kind of tells its own story for a start. And, you know, it is a tough place to go. I think going into this tour, you know, the easy message or the easy narrative is this is a great opportunity, this is a great chance for experience. The likelihood is it was going to be a car crash, and so it proved.
Indeed. Were there any kind of positives at all, do you think, from the West Indies point of view? I guess there were some good individual performances, like you say, Rodman Powell scoring a few runs, as well as some wickets for the debutant there, Akhil Hussain, as well as Azhari Joseph. Were there any kind of glimmers of hope amongst the wreckage?
Oh, definitely. I mean, I think, Azhari Joseph, I thought, bowled really well. I think his economy rate throughout the course of what was a difficult tour was under 4. Akhil Hussain was outstanding. 3 wickets on debut. He bowled tidily throughout the course of the game. Actually, you know, a lot of these guys actually scored a few runs down the order as well. So it's certainly not, a complete disaster from the West Indies squad. I think what I might have done, and actually what a lot of the phone-ins back in the West Indies talked about, and I mean, I was covering the tour for Flow Sports, which is the Caribbean broadcast that goes back. And a lot of what they were saying is what they should have done was like, you know, one of the strengths of Bangladesh is that fundamentally you've kind of got one squad for both disciplines. And that's the beauty of the side. A lot of those players who are outstanding in that one day series will go on to be outstanding in this test series. I think what the West Indies should have done was basically just pool their resources, narrowed it down to the best sort of 17 players available and taken them for both aspects of the tour. I think trying to spread the resources too thinly as they did, I think has proved costly.
Indeed. Thanks for that view, Johnny. Shaminbhai, over to you then in terms of what positives Bangladesh can take from the series. Obviously, such a comprehensive win. They won by 6 wickets, 7 wickets, and then 120 runs. But amongst the ease of that, those victories, were there anything that they learned?
Before I go into that, can I just continue on what Johnny was saying about the West Indian team? It is very disappointing, and you mentioned the reasons why. Isn't it about time? They've faced this kind of situation so many times before. Player strikes, this, that, and the other. Is because they come from different territories. That is the biggest problem I feel the West Indians have in gelling together and getting a consensus. Like if a Bangladesh cricket board, Pakistan cricket board, or the Indian board, they would insist on players, you know, playing for the country before they're allowed to go and play in all these 2020 leagues around the world. But unfortunately for the West Indies, they don't have the unity of being one country. They're coming from other territories. How you, before I go to Bangladesh, I'd like to ask Johnny, how would you address that for the future?
It's, do you know, Shamim, it's an enduring narrative, actually, that I went on the tour of the Caribbean, actually England's tour of the Caribbean, where West Indies were successful. It was a dramatic series. They had their best players available. They won 2-1, and it was a brilliant tour. Also, the ODI series was outstanding. It finished up 2 apiece with one game that was ruled out in Grenada. I mean, during that tour, the enduring narrative was Jason Holder saying, the fundamental problem is it's the split of the resources. You know, your cricket fundamentally is only as good as the money or revenue that the West Indies board develops. That's the fundamental problem. You've got players pulling out of this tour who effectively, if they went on the tour, would be paid effectively $2,500, you know, per test match. They go to the IPL and they're looking at $1.2-1.5 million for a 6-week window. I mean, this is the hard and fast problem. And now you've got COVID, you've got the excuse of COVID, if you like. It's very easy for players to pull out on that basis and avoid the bubbles, you know, citing mental health. But fundamentally, I mean, that is the problem. You know, I think the average central contract for the West Indies is about, you know, I think they have something like about 5% of what the ECB operate in terms of their overall budget. And that, you know, the English cricket board. And that is the main problem. I think until there's a more equal split of the pie, as far as the resources are concerned from an ICC point of view, where all member nations get a slightly bigger pool. And if that's purely for test cricket, then great. Then until you have a kind of redistribution of wealth, these problems will always continue.
Yeah, I would strongly agree with that. I think the economics of the game and the way that the game is run on a global level certainly has a huge impact for teams like the West Indies and to a certain extent as well, teams like Bangladesh in terms of the slice of the pie that they're getting. Moving on then to focus a little bit on Bangladesh's performance and the comprehensive victories that they carried out throughout the series. Shaminbhai, yeah, just interested in your view on what they learned.
Well, first of all, there was a sense that complacency might prevail prior to the start of the series, realizing the fact that it was a severely depleted West Indian squad. Thankfully, senses prevailed and the guidance by the think tank was done properly. You saw even with chasing a target of 128 in the first ODI, they took their time. They just didn't throw away their wickets. It got a bit boring, to tell you frankly. It was just meandering along and it was slow death. But the thing was, the essence of it was that none of the Bangladesh batters were prepared to throw away their wickets, which is a good sign, because there has been a tendency in the past to have a rush of blood when things are going very nicely. There's a rush of blood and you just throw away your wickets. And this was the ideal scenario for that kind of attitude by the batters in particular. So I think in that respect, that is a big gain. I mean, and also being rusty, not playing cricket for 9 months, they also were telling themselves, right, let's get as much batting practice as we can in the middle. Nets is one thing. Playing out in the middle is a completely different thing altogether. I think they took advantage of that, took advantage of the fact that they were depleted, as we keep on harping on, but that's the fact. And then really, I think right through the series, when they got the opportunity to bat first, they posted 297, which is the highest score at the Zohor Ahmed Chowdhury Stadium in One Day Internationals for Bangladesh. And that's when the two games prior to that had built up that confidence and getting back to normal kind of feeling with the body. I mean, you've got to really get attuned and your body back supple, back to match fit conditions. They're not completely internationally match fit. I've seen a few niggles here and there. Shakib Al-Hassan, the other, drawing up with the groin strain, a couple of other minor injuries. So these might not have happened if they were playing cricket regularly. So these are the plus points that they took. It was very emphatic, very convincing. That'll give them that morale booster, which is excellent to go into the test series. But I think little things that mattered actually worked out very nicely. They were not in a hurry. They took their time. And despite the fact that some people might have found it a little boring and a little one-sided, I think in the long run, it was beneficial for Bangladesh cricket.
Yeah, some really good points there you make, Shamim Bhai. I certainly noticed a professionalism amongst the batting. Like you say, during those two low chases, it seemed like they set out with a very deliberate plan and strategy to kind of get the runs. They weren't too bothered about the run rate. It was just a case of getting across the line. And as you say, sometimes it doesn't make for the most entertaining of games, or you know, the most entertaining of spectacles as a fan. But at the end of the day, I guess, you know, it was all about getting those points, and that's exactly what they did. I'd like to focus on individual performances from the Bangladesh team. So, Johnny, going to you firstly, were there any kind of standout performances that you noted?
I mean, to be honest, I mean, they were outstanding with bat and ball. I mean, there was a couple of nerves, wasn't there, in that first chase. They made heavy weather at 4 wickets down. But, I mean, Shakib coming back in, what did he get, 4 for 8 in that first game? You know, I mean, just... You hadn't really played any cricket for 9 months. I mean, actually, funny enough, the sort of timing of the ban and the timing of the world shutting down didn't do him too many favours. Too much harm. I don't think he missed a great deal of cricket in that period. But he was outstanding, and with the bat as well. I mean, I've got the averages in front of me. You know, they were really, Tamim Iqbal, of course, you know, a couple of 50s and a score of 42. I mean, they strangled West Indies with the ball. That was the bottom line. And you know, from a run point of view, never looked in any danger. You've got three players who averaged above 50. I thought it was a really sort of professional sort of demolition in home conditions in which they're exceptional. And of course they've got 30 points on the board. It's been a really, really good start to their campaign.
Yeah. It's just 30 points they're gonna get in the next few years.
Yeah, I would certainly agree with some of those individuals that you've highlighted. I think Tamim getting, 158 runs throughout the whole series. As you say, I thought they did get bogged down a little bit in that first game in terms of that chase. And I know there's been some criticism levelled at Tamim over the last probably few years, actually, in terms of his strike rate not being quite as high as it should be in white ball cricket. However, you know, whatever you say about him, he gets the job done, and that's exactly what they did in each of those games. Shamim Bhai, going over to you then, in terms of individual performances from the Bangladesh team, I was particularly impressed with a debutant in the first game and the second game, Hassan Mahmoud. Do you want to talk a little bit about him?
Yes, absolutely. I think it's such a good thing to see a crop of Bangladeshi pacers coming through the ranks, despite the fact the wickets are still not as conducive for fast bowlers or seamers as it is in other parts of the world. But there has been a little bit of effort made by the Bangladesh Cricket Board in the recent past couple of years to make fresh tracks, grassy tracks, to ensure that their younger crop of pace bowlers get at least that encouragement when they come in as pace bowlers. And that has resulted in Shorifpool, Hassan Mahmoud, guys like this coming in, under 19 players who have made a name for themselves, winning the under 19 World Cup, and Hassan Mahmoud coming through the he didn't come in the sort of age level group. He was really coming through the club levels, which is a different route to take. There are three routes, basically. BKSP, the Bangladesh Kriya Shikha Pratishthan, which is the sports academy. There are a lot of products from there who come in to the national play. There are a group who come in through the under 17, under 19s, A team, and then on to the national team. And there's another like Hassan Mahmoud who come in, play domestic cricket at club level, maybe outside of Dhaka, and then for the Dhaka Premier League, he's a product of that. So it's good to see sources, different sourcing of, and that tells you a lot about the bench strength and the grassroots strength of Bangladesh cricket. Very, very, very impressed with his bowling. Still a long way to go. I just felt, maybe because it was the West Indies, he was sort of blooded, but he might not have been if it had been a stronger side opposing. So opportunity taken, and he took it with both hands. Kudos to him, but just still feel that he should be watched a little further, physical, with his physical abilities and shortcomings, if I might say it. He looks a little frail to me at times, so needs to build some muscles, and maybe that's the way to go. But it's an auspicious start, so that's a very good point indeed. I think there are a lot of others. I mentioned Shorif for the left armer, but he'll have a tough time because he'll have to replace Mustafizur Rahman, who bowls in a similar style, and that's going to be a tough job. So a lot of good prospects in the pace bowling department for Bangladesh.
Yeah, absolutely agree with that, Shamin Bhai. I think, a really promising start from Hassan Mahmoud. And you're absolutely right. I think there's a tendency maybe for, certainly from fans, to get carried away with a couple of good performances. And certainly with Bangladesh fans, maybe there's a tendency to kind of over-expect after such a promising start. So I would... As you rightly do, sort of urge a little bit of caution and also ask for a bit of patience, I suppose, give him time to develop and understand his game. Johnny, then, going back to you, in terms of picking up on some individual performances, what I thought was particularly pleasing was the resurgence of a couple of Bangladesh players who had kind of been in the doldrums a little bit in terms of form and fitness. One of those being Mehdi Hassan Miraj, who picked up 7 wickets in total through the series. What's your take on the way he bowled?
Yeah, I thought he was absolutely outstanding. And that 4 wickets he picked up, I think, was in the second ODI, I thought was really, really impressive. And look, it's a great tour, actually. If you're looking to build confidence with the slightly more experienced players and bring on the less experienced players, then this is the perfect time to do it against a very sort of threadbare West Indies side. And I'd like to pick up actually on Hassan Mahmoud as well, because I also, I thought he had a wonderful debut, actually. And looked, I thought he looked like a young Dale Steyn. Now, I might be over-egging the pudding at this stage, but I just thought, the way he just kept things so simple in that first game, just bowled wicket to wicket. And, alongside the likes of the Fizz, who's been, a world star for a period of time now in many formats, they indicated, there's lots of players who are coming through, and off the back of that World Cup win as well, the cupboard looks in a really, really tidy position as far as Bangladesh cricket is concerned, and you're going to see that even more as well in the in the test squad. But I think, you know, the bottom line, or one of the great things that Bangladesh have across both squads, is huge amounts of experience. And a lot of these players that are experienced aren't necessarily that old. They're somewhere between the sort of 32 and 35 mark, aren't they? But they've been around forever. And, you know, if you can keep players of that caliber inside your sort of cricket network and cricket output, then you've got every chance. A lot of the problems that, you know, sides like the West Indies have is that, you know, players, you know, will go a little journey on the international journey, and then suddenly they'll get distracted by other riches that are on offer. And that's the difficulty. The fact that Bangladesh keep pulling out these players time and again, I think, is a fantastic testament to the system.
For sure. I remember you making that Dale Steyn comparison, I think, on Twitter. And
right.
Absolutely.
I just hope Hasan Mahmood does not get to hear of it. It will go to his head. You don't want that. You don't want that.
I remember saying, if he turns out sort of half as good as Dale Steyn, I'll be very happy. Yeah. Shamim, by going back to you, in terms of the topic of players who are making a resurgence, it seems to me that there's a few Bangladesh players where their career path kind of follows a similar trajectory, i.e. they'll burst onto the scene maybe as a teenager, they'll do fantastically well for maybe 6 months to a year. Then, for whatever reason, maybe the opposition have kind of worked out how to play them a bit better. They'll kind of end up losing their form a little bit. They'll lose their fitness and their confidence. And that means that they then have to come back again a second time. I think players like Mehdi Hasan, maybe Tuskin as well, you could include in that bracket. Interested to hear your views on that.
Well, the first thing I indicated when talking about Hasan Mahmood is sort of blooding all these youngsters a little too early. This has happened once too often in the past with Bangladesh, when they've picked up players who have just done well in one tournament or against a touring side, and suddenly they're throwing them in the deep end, and they're not prepared physically, mentally, to face these challenges. And as quickly as they're blooded in, they're discarded in disgrace, because they just cannot sustain the pressure and the requirements of top-level cricket. So this is where the think tank, and thankfully they have changed in attitude, they're taking their time, they're sticking to more experienced players, and slowly and gradually getting them, when opportunities arise, to blood them in to this top round. This practice has to stop. I just feel that there's enough international cricket at A levels. The Bangladesh A team might go on tour, or other A teams coming, under 19 levels, to get the experience that's required for them to prepare them for the international circuit. One or two exceptional players are going to be there, no denying that, and they will come up once in a while. But generally, I'd rather that these guys, instead of coming in at 18, 19, rather they come in at 22, 23, with 3 or 4 more years of international experience of cricket at a slightly lower but competitive level. This is one thing they've got to address soon. Otherwise, things like people, as you mentioned, who was actually, you know, selected very early when he was hardly 18. And then he comes in and immediately the problem, he was a speedster, 140 plus regular basis, though always very erratic, I thought. But the problem was his body could not sustain it. He had niggles, injuries, right from the word go. And that's what pegged him back. Keeps on coming back for 1 or 2 games. Then he gets another injury, and it's a repetitive process. Same thing he's going through right now. Even now, I don't feel he's 100% fit. He seems to have found his rhythm, thankfully. I just hope for his own sake that he can carry on without any health issues. So this one area, Mehdi Hasan Miraj, no health issues, but it was more performance than health issues. Ideal opportunity. He's done well, excellent bowling. And I tell you what, that wicket on the first day was turning square. There had been a bit of rain, as you know, the rain delayed the start of play. It was muggy right from the day before. It was already gripping, and on a drying sort of wicket with the overhead conditions, the ball was turning. Ideal conditions for even what's his name? Hussain, the West Indian spinner, Akhil Hussain. He drifted. Oh, what a lovely delivery. I remember drifted the ball in, pitching on the leg stump and turning and beating the bat and hitting the off stump completely against the trajectory. It was turning away. Superb delivery. But that was with a little help from the wicket. So that's not what you're going to get always. So Mehdi Hasan Miraj took advantage of that second innings or second ODI also. He bowled very well. But sorry, I might be dragging this on a little bit more. It's just that the bench strength, you get tempted to get these youngsters in. But thankfully, as Johnny has mentioned, we have persisted with a lot of experienced players over a long period of time. Except for Mashrafi, who's gone now, the other top four, you know, are still there. Mushfiqur Rahim, Mahmudullah Riyad, and Shakib and Tamim. So that core being there, then you can play around with the others. There is, thankfully, a huge, it's a pleasant dilemma for the selectors when you have such a good crop of players and who to leave out and who to bring in to a team. But with this West Indian depleted squad, opportunities have been given for the selectors to try various combinations.
Yeah, it's a really good point you make about exposing players or exposing young players too early to international competition. And exactly as you say, I think the pathways now are much more defined in terms of the pathways towards international cricket for young Bangladesh players. So as you say, hopefully that issue will be avoided in the future. I wanted to turn now away from the white ball towards the red ball. So the first test begins in a few days' time. I just wanted to focus on that series now. Johnny, going to you, in terms of the West Indies, well, my hope is that they will be more competitive in the test series. They've got more experienced players coming in to the into the setup for the Red Bull. So you've got people like Shannon Gabriel, Kemar Roach, Craig Brathwaite, Jermaine Blackwood, who obviously played that that match-winning knock against England when they beat them in a test last summer. So how do you assess their strength with the Red Bull?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the West Indies, I've got the squad in front of me. It might even be a little bit out of date, but as far as I know, this is the squad that they're going with. And there are a lot of, you know, experienced players in that side. And, you know, you expect they'll perform a great deal better than the white ball squad. But still, you know, from a spin point of view, you've got the likes of Rakeem Cornwall, who will be a really interesting prospect in turning conditions, actually, in the subcontinent. We saw him over here in England in the summer, and he didn't have a particularly brilliant series playing at Old Trafford in relatively conducive conditions. But I think, you know, you might find that development will count for him quite nicely when he comes into this test side. But yeah, the likes of Craig Brathwaite, and of course Blackwood played that brilliant innings in the summer. Shannon Gabriel, of course, Kemar Roach, you know, Alzari Joseph is still there. He, you know, he'll be good for the run out as well. You know, I would have grabbed Akhil Hussain and kept him as part of the, I wonder if that's going on, but I would definitely keep him as part of the side, because I thought he, you know, the way in which he bowled in that one day series, I think would actually count quite nicely for them in the test side. But you think there'll be a lot more competitive. I mean, the last two series that the West Indies played, you know, they were in a whisker of retaining the Wisden Trophy in England. You know, they beat England in the first test match, were within a, you know, maybe a few key moments in that second test of drawing the game, and they would have taken the Wisden Trophy home. They then came up against New Zealand, who are very strong at home. You know, they're top of the ICC, you know, world rankings, and they are a very tough side to beat. England don't go there and win, and nobody else does, really. I think Western, you know, New Zealand have been, you know, untapped at home for a large period of time. So that is a very, very tough tour. It'd be really interesting to see how they go in Bangladesh conditions starting on Wednesday.
It certainly will. I think, as you kind of touched on there, I think maybe the lack of an absolute quality frontline spinner might potentially be their undoing. But Having said that, as we know, Bangladesh batsmen have always struggled against genuine pace, and that trio of fast bowlers are certainly going to be a handful, if indeed they all play together. It might not be the case that they decide to select all three of them. Shamim, by turning to you and looking at the Bangladesh test team, I guess there's some obvious changes that will take place. So the test captain, Mumunul Haq, will obviously come into the side to captain it. And then on the bowling front, you will have people like Abu Jayed Rahi potentially coming in to the team. And I would expect also Tajul Islam to come into that team as probably the second spinner, along with Mehdi Miraj. And obviously you've got Shakib that will make up the three spinners there. So in terms of team combination, are you expecting that kind of combination of maybe two pacers, two frontline spinners, and Shakib as the bowlers?
I'll come back to that. Just to continue with Johnny's assessment of the West Indian squad, Rakim Cornwall, right at this moment, there's a practice match going on at the MAZ Stadium. That's the other stadium at Chattogram. And West Indies has taken a lead in the first innings. They didn't score too many, 240-odd. I think they were about 65, I think. But they bowled out the Bangladesh cricket board 11 for 160 runs. Rakim Cornwall, 5 wickets. Jamal Warrican, 3 wickets. You're talking about Hussain getting an opportunity, with Jamal, slow left arm, similar kind of bowler, getting 3 wickets. Just feel that might not happen. But this is a different track, very impressive. You're saying that West Indians, the strong point would be their pacers. But as of this game, it's their spinners that have taken the Bangladeshi wicket. So very difficult, once again, for the West Indian think tank to actually decide on whether they're going to go 3 pacers, 2 spinners, or 2 pacers, 3 spinners. Bangladesh, it'll be easier for them. But with a different ground, the test match is going to be played in the ground that the ODI was played. I think that's going to take a little lesser turn than the MIRC stadium. So a lot of things to work out for the West Indies, but it augurs well for them. And they definitely have a much stronger test squad than they had the ODI squad. So hopefully they're going to put up a better fight. I just want some good cricket in the middle so that both the teams can really enjoy themselves and have a good match and entertain the crowd, which has to watch from home, unfortunately. Now, to Bangladesh. Yes, absolutely agree with you, Tahid. I think that's the way they're going to go. 2 pacers. Abu Jayed Rahi is chomping at the bits to come back into the game, and he wants to make a point because he hasn't really been very consistent in the opportunities that he's had previously. This is an ideal opportunity with the so-called depleted West Indian team. So, and Mustafizur Rahman, spin, as you mentioned, the 3, I think that's going to be there. Not many changes. Mumunul Haq is going to come into the team. It will be the usual test squad. There won't be any surprises as such. I don't see any coming from the selectors.
And what kind of a wicket do you think will be prepared in Chattogram for that first test?
Well, with just about 3 or 4 days to go on the third, it starts. They're not going to have much opportunity of changing the nature, the character of the wicket. I mean, you lay it down. I mean, it's not like it's a drop-in pitch that you come in on the last day before the game and stick it in. It will tend to have its inherent character, which is slightly dustier than it is, brownish soil compared to the Sherebangla National Stadium wicket, which is a darker clay base. This is more sort of brownish clay base that tends to get a little dusty on the surface after the third day. So that's a tendency for the spinners to lick their lips. So I think, but there is one factor. There is a bit of dew around, quite heavy, even during the day. Right at this moment, middle of the day, it's gone a little bit dark because there is some fog about. And that has a tendency to just settle some moisture on the wicket, though they have it covered most of the time these days. But I just feel that it won't have too much bounce. And for that reason, the tendency will be not to go for the pace bowlers, rather tend on your strength. For Bangladesh, has always been spin. It'll still remain that way, I suspect.
Yeah, I suspect you're absolutely right. I mean, from a personal point of view, I'm really looking forward to Abu Dhabi and Rahi playing, and indeed the Fizz. I think that's really quite...
That's also because he's from Sylhet, as are you.
bit of regional bias there, absolutely. Absolutely shine by, right to pick me up on that. But in general, I guess Bangladesh don't actually play a lot of test matches. And they don't, as you well know, Shamimbhai, there hasn't been any first-class cricket within Bangladesh for probably well over 12 months now. So his opportunities are really few and far between. So really excited and interesting to see how he performs. So before we wrap up, I mean, it's been a fascinating conversation. I'm sure we can talk for a lot longer. Maybe I could get a couple of predictions from each of you about how the test series might end up. Johnny, let me go to you first for a prediction.
I think, you know, trying to beat Bangladesh in their own backyard with the squad available for the West Indies will be very difficult. Having said that, if they win the toss, they get something on the board at Chottagram, then they have got a chance. Of course, Shamimbhai did a famous test match about 14 months ago, of course, where Afghanistan in their second or third ever game won in those conditions. But that was a side very suited to those conditions. West Indies less so, and without the experience of somebody like Roston Chase, who would give them a little bit of flexibility with bat and ball, it will be very difficult for them. I would expect Bangladesh to win comprehensively 2-0.
Excellent. Thanks for that, Johnny. The Bangladesh fans will be happy to hear that prediction. Shamimbhai, can you see West Indies getting anything at all from this series?
They are going to put up a fight. They're going to put up a better fight than they did in the ODI series, that's for sure. And just going back to that Afghanistan test, my Johnny, that actually is something that the Bangladeshi should remember. False sense of security, complacency, everything played into that defeat. And and also the selection of the team and the wicket, a lot of different factors went in. Just one pace bowler in that game for Bangladesh. So if they learn from their mistakes, that is one game they'll be immediately looking at and saying, look, this might be a similar kind of strength to Afghanistan side, the West Indian side, because they're depleted. But let's go and play our normal game. We're not going to take them lightly. But I agree with you, despite the fact that West Indies might be putting up a better fight in this series, the test series, I think Bangladesh are going to take it quite comfortably.
Thank you, Shamimbhai. And yeah, excellent words of caution again there in terms of guarding against complacency. I'm sure they will be heeded. Thank you both once again. It's been fantastic to talk to you. I'm sure we will talk again in the near future. But for the time being, thank you very much. And thank you, everyone, for listening. Thank you.
Shamim, lovely to see you again.
Thank you for having us. And you, Johnny, hope to catch up again soon. Take care.
Very much so. Thanks,
guys. Thanks, Tohit. Bye-bye.